Welcome to Quick Brain, bite-sized brain hacks for busy people who want to learn faster and achieve more. I'm your coach, Jim Quick.
Free your mind.
Let's imagine if we could access 100% of our brain's capacity.
I wasn't high, wasn't wired, just clear. I knew what I needed to do and how to do it.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
What if your biggest relationship conflicts could actually bring you closer and create deeper intimacy? Learn the secrets of what happy couples are really fighting about behind closed doors from top relationship experts who will reveal the four horsemen behaviors that ruin marriages and the bagel method that happy couples use to compromise and connect. Welcome back, Quick Brains. I am your host and your brain coach, Jim Quick. Today, we're going to be digging into the secrets that happy couples know about navigating conflict that others don't. We'll explore behaviors that could spell disaster for your partnership or lead to smarter compromises and find out why the first 3 minutes of an argument matter so much. They are the authors of the new book, Fight Right, How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. Welcome to the show, Drs. Julie and John Gottman.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
We're happy to be here.
Oh, my goodness. So I mentioned to you before we started recording that I am a big fan and follower of your work. And so I've been looking forward to this conversation. And congratulations on your newest book. And
thank you.
To our listeners, in this episode, I want to address the role of the brain in conflict and connection and how conflict can actually lead to greater connection and deeper intimacy in relationships. Before we do that, people are probably looking at the title. And when you're thinking about fighting right, most couples, they seek you out for help with conflict, but you say conflict is also an opportunity for greater levels of intimacy and deeper connection and lasting love. So maybe we could start with that. How is that so? How do you look at it?
So a lot of people really think that conflict is a bad thing. They think couples who fight are not going to be successful in their relationships. But actually, we've seen the opposite in our research. So there, what we saw is that the couples who, first of all, didn't get critical and contemptuous of one another, nor defensive, had a much better time with conflict. And secondly, a lot of times people stay on the surface with a conflict issue. They don't go deeper into childhood background related to their position on an issue, or perhaps their value system, maybe their ideal dream that they're harboring beneath their position on an issue. So when we give couples an intervention that allows them to go much deeper and talk to one another in a more quality, deeper subterranean level beneath that superficial issue, people learn so much about one another that they didn't know before, even if they've been together for 25 years. Thus, it really deepens your understanding of your partner's internal landscape. And that, in turn, leads to greater connection.
Oh, I want to talk about the first few minutes. You talk about in the book the first 3 minutes of a fight and why they're so important. Why is that? Why should couples be very conscious of how they start that communication?
Yeah, great question, Jim. What we saw in our research is that the first 3 minutes of a conflict conversation predicts not only how the rest of the conversation will go with over 96% accuracy,
Wow. It
also predicts how the rest of the relationship will go 6 years down the road. So that first 3 minutes is really crucial. What we found is that the people who really didn't know how to have conflict would bring up issues with criticism. You're so lazy, you never clean up the kitchen. What's the matter with you? Okay, so how is somebody going to respond to that, right? So when people bring up an issue by pointing their finger and blaming their partner for the problem, some personality flaw, what ends up happening is they sabotage getting listened to. Their partner's just going to be defensive and not hear them. The successful couples do something very different. What they do is they describe themselves instead in a almost a specific formula. They begin with, I feel something. I'm upset. I'm stressed. I'm angry. I'm worried. Then they say, about what? What's the situation that they're having the feeling about? Like, I'm annoyed that the kitchen is a mess. Okay, that's the situation. Then they finish their beginnings with a positive need. And that positive need, basically, is how can your partner shine for you? What can they do to make you feel better about this situation? So altogether, it's I feel some emotion about what situation, and here's what I need so that you can shine for me. And that way of bringing up a problem eliminates all the criticism, contempt, and defensiveness, and really opens up both people to connecting through the conflict.
It's so interesting that this isn't taught to students, to adults. It's just, you're just supposed to know this, similar to what we teach in terms of how to focus or how to remember, how to study. It's not really taught. Our audience, they're all about the brain. And I was just wondering, maybe there's an answer for this, is how does your understanding of the brain's or the nervous system's response to emotional triggers help couples maybe fight right and communicate more effectively? I mean, you could take it for so many different angles, from neuroplasticity to parasympathetic, sympathetic states. But yeah, just wondering where does the brain fit in to this way of looking at it?
Yeah. Well, Jim, my colleague Bob Levinson and I, over 50 years ago, built a lab where we synchronized the autonomic nervous system to the video time code. So we were measuring heart rate, how much people were sweating from the palms of their hands, blood velocity, respiration, gross motor movement, all these kinds of physiological measures. And what we discovered was that the people who are autonomically aroused, whose blood is flowing faster, whose hearts are beating faster, who are sweating more, over a three-year period, their relationships deteriorated.
Interesting.
And the reason we figured out was that they're really close to being in fight or flight. They're secreting cortisol and adrenaline, our two stress hormones. And when you do that, when you're physiologically aroused that way, you're in fight or flight, you can't even process information very well. You can't listen very well. You're certainly not a creative problem solver, because you feel like running, or you feel like just shutting your partner down. It's so aversive. So the autonomic nervous system plays a really big role. And what we've learned is that when people get flooded, that's our term for physiological arousal, general arousal, it's really important to take a break.
Yeah.
And Julie, why don't you tell Jim about what a break needs to be?
Sure. So a lot of people will just say, okay, let's not talk about this anymore, and they shut everything down. That doesn't work. What we've seen that is really successful is that when a person feels flooded, they need to stop on a dime, say, I'd like to take a break. And they need to say when they'll come back specifically to talk about the issue again. A break shouldn't last any shorter than probably 20 to 30 minutes, or any longer than 24 hours. Then during the break, what do you do? Well, don't think about the perfect rebuttal for your partner. Instead, what you need to do is do something self-soothing. Do something like reading a book, reading a magazine, doing your email, going for a run, playing with the dog, meditating, doing yoga, anything that brings your heart rate down below 100 beats a minute, so that your body can really be equipped to think creatively and to problem solve.
I love that because it's when people are going through that flooding and they have that cortisol and that adrenaline and they're in that sympathetic fight, flight, freeze, it's like almost that you're held hostage in your survival brain and don't have access to your executive functioning, your creativity, maybe levels of compassion and more. And so you're deregulating. We talk about having a brain break, but what a wonderful opportunity to interrupt the pattern and just take a break where you set a set time. So you're setting expectations and where you can deregulate.
How can you tell if you're flooded? The answer is if you're flooded, if you think that repeating yourself louder will make you more convincing, then you're flooded.
Yeah, yelling.
Right? And the 33rd time you think your partner is going to slap their forehead and say, oh, well, I get it. Probably not.
Because clearly the strategy, what you're doing, it would be insanity doing the same thing over and over again or louder and louder again and expecting a different result. In the book, you talk about your research and you found that during conflict, couples who exhibit these four key behaviors, I think you call them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, they were likely to split an average of, 5 years, like post-wedding or something like that.
About 6.2 years after the wedding.
Okay.
Yeah, if they have the four horsemen.
Are you a high achiever constantly seeking that next level of success? Welcome to the Quick Success Program. It's a deep dive and support system to master your life and scale to new heights in personal and professional achievement. Included is our exclusive monthly book club, where we process transformative ideas from amazing books to level up your learning and your life. We also bring the author to the club to answer your burning questions. You could also participate in monthly live coaching calls with me, where your questions meet my decades of expertise. Simply go to quicksuccess.com, that's quiksuccess.com, and choose the plan that works best for you.
Which is criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. So if they do those four things, they're basically pointing their finger at their partner and saying, you know, as far as I can tell, I'm pretty much perfect, but you're defective. And here's what's wrong with you. And they hope that that statement will get their partner to say, oh, John, you're so intelligent. Thank you for pointing out all my faults. You know, can we have dinner next week so you can tell me all the other ways in which I'm failing as a human being and wife and mother? Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way because when you attack and use criticism, what you get back is defensiveness, an escalation, or an innocent victim kind of response. And so what you really need to do is use that formula that Julie described. Talk about yourself and what your positive need is.
So from contempt to stonewalling, I guess, how would you avoid those behaviors is to replace it with what you were talking about, Julie?
Yes. Describe yourself. Don't describe your partner, describe yourself. And one thing, Jim, that I wanted to add for your listeners is that contempt is really criticism from on high, from a place of superiority that adds in a little bit of scorn and disgust. And contempt is not only sulfuric acid for the relationship, it also destroys the immune system. Isn't that amazing? So that the number of times that a listener hears contempt in 15 minutes predicts how many infectious illnesses they will have in the coming 4 years.
I did an episode on our podcast on psychoneuroimmunology and just being in that constant state, makes you more susceptible to colds, to flus, to viruses.
Right.
I mean, everything is so tied together. And I love how we're bringing this into the conversations about connectiveness. We have a group of a book club and amongst other things where we do live coaching and it's called Quick Success. Many of our audience, there you go to quicksuccess.com. They had a couple of questions and one of them was around the bagel method. you could explain what that is and how it works.
The bagel method, or depending on your culture, the donut method, is a wonderful way to achieve compromise. Now, what that needs to be preceded by is a deeper understanding of who your partner is. Again, asking your partner questions about their background history related to this issue, their values, their ideal dream that may be subterranean underneath the superficial position they're taking on an issue. Once you have greater understanding of one another, then one of the best things we've learned about compromise is that people cannot compromise if they feel like they're giving up something that is central to who they are, central to their identity.
What would be an example of that?
Okay, so let's say that somebody really, really wants to get a dog and their partner doesn't. Okay, why do they want to get that dog? Well, maybe because they see the dog and taking care of the dog as practice for having children later and building a family. While the other person may say, no, I don't want a dog. Why is that? Because they value freedom. They really want the freedom to travel, to go, to see, to have adventures. And one can't do that with a dog along, you see. And so there's an underlying dream for each of them around, do we get a dog or not? So in the bagel method, here's what we ask folks to do, and it really works beautifully. You take a big piece of paper, draw a bagel on it or a donut, and in the center circle, write down your position on this issue, what you cannot compromise on. It's just impossible. It would feel like giving up the bones of your body, whether that's an ideal dream or a core need, you know, whatever it is. And then in the outside circle, you write down what you're more flexible about. And the flexibility tends to fall into details about a compromise. Things like when you'll do something, where, who will do it, how long will it last, how much will you spend. Let me give you a great example of how this worked. Is that all right?
Yeah, please.
We had a couple where their dreams were the opposite. They were looking at retirement, and the gentleman wanted to sell their house, buy a sailboat, sail around the world. His wife wanted to go live on a farm that had been in her family for over a century. She wanted to take her place in the legacy of ancestors on that farm. Where's the farm located? Iowa. How do you sail around the world from Iowa? This is not an easy thing to do. So they did the bagel method. He put sailing in his center circle. She put living on the farm. And then in their flexibility, that's where they found a compromise. Whose dream goes first? How long will it last? Where will we go? When will we go? And they arrived at a compromise like this. First, they would sail for 1 year, get as far as they could, then put the boat up on dry dock and return to the farm in Iowa, live on the farm for a year. And after 2 years, they would base their next dreams on that 2 years of experience. There's a compromise for you.
And it takes a level of curiosity also, right? And to curiosity to know yourself, because some people aren't really clear what they want or why they want it. And then also clarity on for your clarity and curiosity, having curiosity to know your partner.
Yeah. And part of why this works is that compromises get sabotaged when people give up too much just for the sake of peace, when they're really selling themselves out in the compromise. So here, they're not selling themselves out. They're really communicating why these needs are so important to their partner. And then as a team, they're working on a compromise, a team that honors both people's dreams and hopes and wishes.
I love it. To our audience who are listening, I talk about the power of reading. And if somebody has decades of experience, which the two of you do, and you put it into a book and somebody could read that book in a handful of days, they could download decades of wisdom and insights and practical instruction into days. And that's just a wonderful gift that you could give yourself. So make sure you do that. We will link to Drs. Julie and John Gottman's to their website, to their social media at on the show notes, as we always do at jimquick.com/notes. And I want to thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
You're a great interviewer.
Yes.
It's really been helpful.
Really wonderful questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. Everyone, follow them on social media. I'm sure you could find them in these different places if you want. Take a screenshot of where you're consuming this episode.
Yeah, and go to topmen.com as well.
Perfect. And tag us both there so we get to see it. And share your one takeaway. And I feel like when you share something, you get to learn it twice. So that way your fans, your followers, your family, your friends get to benefit from what you learned here today. So thank you both so much. And everyone who's listening to our next episode, be limitless.